The readings from Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16. It's on page 969 in the Pew Bible. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven.
Brilliant. Can everyone hear me? I'm not sure if I need this, but I'll keep it there just in case. I'll tell you what, let me just get everything arranged. So it's great to be with you guys again. It's almost exactly 2 years to the day since I was up here last. There are many reasons for that, which I won't go into now, although some of them might come in the talk. But two things I'd ask at the beginning. Firstly, I've given you each one of these small leaflets. Hopefully, as I say, it's been 2 years. Maybe you might fall asleep. Maybe I'm rubbish at this, and you're going to fall asleep. So hopefully this will keep you engaged, maybe. It'll at least give you a bit of a map. So keep your eyes on that. The second thing I'd ask is do reach for a Bible. So there's normally a Bible just underneath. Do reach for that. Matthew 5, verse 13. Matthew 5, verse 13. So this evening, I've got my stopwatch here as well, so I don't go on too long. I'm probably going to knock all of this off, but oh well. So this evening, we're going to be looking at the topic of growing in outreach. So we're doing a series on growing as a church, and I've got growing in outreach. And I don't know, I wonder what you all feel when I say that. Do we all slightly cringe in our seats and think, ugh, awkward questions. Am I doing enough? Do I share the good news of Jesus enough? All those questions that suddenly make us feel like we're absolutely rubbish and that we're not doing great. And I think if I'm honest, I find it difficult to share my faith. I think if we're all honest, we find it difficult to share our faith. I guess the key of tonight, if you leave not having heard anything else, it's that if our relationship with Jesus is right, then sharing him should follow naturally. So I want to start this evening by telling you about two friends of mine. They really exist. Their stories aren't made up. They're not even exaggerated. The first one is one of my best friends. He started work in the city 10 years ago, same time as me. And I remember him telling me about his first week at the company he just joined on their graduate scheme. So they laid on a welcome lunch for all the new grads. You have your seniors there. You've got the kind of the important people there. Picture an exec-style lunch room, dining, big dining table, lots of chairs, pizza. And they each had to go around one of those, again, cringe-worthy moments where you have to share one interesting thing about yourself. So you have one grad that stands up, the keen one, and says, I love learning and studying and developing myself. And then you've got another one who says, traveling the world is what makes me me. And then my friend stood up, and he told me this. He stood up and he said, you know what, the most important thing about me is that I'm a Christian. And I was so amazed that he had the guts to do that, the courage to stand up in front of 30, 40 people, plus the seniors, in such a charged setting as well. He's just started. He's got a kind of a reputation to build and say that. And my second friend is Anna. She and I went to university together in Durham. She was an amazing sportswoman, best frisbee forehand I've ever seen, man or woman. And she was training to be a teacher. She was a great teacher. But most of all, Anna was a Christian, and it was without doubt the most important thing about her. It still is today. She wore her faith on her sleeve, and that was something I will never forget. And I've never met anyone more transparent and more open about their love of Jesus. No filters, No fear of what people might think of her. No holding back in certain situations because the message didn't quite fit. She was full of courage. And as a result of Anna, there are multiple people who are Christians today because of Anna. And one of my best friends as well. Total rebel, slept with everyone at university. One of those guys is a Christian today. Actually, he's a pastor today because of Anna. These two friends, for me, are two great examples of Christians whose faith naturally flowed out of their lives. Outreach wasn't, I've got a slide up, I think. Outreach wasn't something that they did, but it was something that their very lives and everything about them was just intertwined with sharing Jesus. And in the passage tonight, Jesus likens our faith to being salt and to being light. Why salt? Because salt heals. It's the kind of thing you put, imagine if on the kind of, I don't know, ships where you've got maggots eating wounds, and sorry to take you there, but and salt, you put salt in to kind of cleanse it. It preserves, it heals, it adds taste. It transforms, it's distinctive. Why light? Because it stands out. Light reveals and it exposes things. It scatters darkness. It brings clarity. It guides. Think of a lighthouse. There's that great Rend Collective song, My Lighthouse. Mm. Light guides. And Jesus is very clear, and this is my first point. Salt and light are in our DNA. They are in my DNA. Jesus is very clear. Being salt and light is part of who we become when we become Christians, when we become his followers. Look down at chapter 5 in your Bibles. Just in the previous chapter, Jesus has, I think it's verse 18 of chapter 4, Jesus has just called his disciples. So he's called those very first disciples. Then he kind of attracts a big crowd. I don't know if the two situations were totally together, but certainly the next moment in the Bible is he's on this mountainside. Big crowds come towards him, and this is the moment of the Sermon of the Mount. And he's talking and speaking to people about what it means to follow him. Blessed are you when people insult you and when people persecute you because of me. He's talking about what it means to follow Jesus. And then in the same breath, in our passage, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Jesus is saying, being salt and being light are in your DNA if you join me. Look down again. I'll take you through a couple of verses here. So verse 14, you are the light of the world, a city on a hill. We had that great picture from Victoria. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. You see, a city on a hill can't suddenly decide, hey, I don't want to be on a hill one day. Actually, I want to be down in the valley so no one can see me. And Jesus is just saying, he's saying, just like a city on a hill can't be hidden. It cannot be hidden. It's not even possible to hide itself. So you are also different. You stand out. You are like that city. You can't just blend in. And then verse 15. And this is one of my favorite verses of all time. Neither do people light a lamp and hide it, put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on the stand and it gives light to everybody. What Jesus means is that a lamp's very reason for being is to give light, to scatter this light everywhere. It would be ridiculous to cover it up. It would be going against the very reason for that lamp's existence. And he's saying, don't hold the truth of the gospel to yourself. If we do cover it, then we're not really fulfilling our true purpose of being light in the world. I wonder what you see as your main purpose in life. One of my heroes in life is a man called, he's going to come up on the screen, is a man called Eric Liddell. How many people know who Eric Liddell is? If you're below 20, do you know who Eric Liddell is? Yeah, we got one. Shame, this guy's amazing. He was in the film Chariots of Fire. So particularly youngsters, if you're under 20, go and watch Chariots of Fire. Now, Eric Liddell was one of the greatest runners of his generation. In fact, he was the greatest runner probably of his generation. Amazingly, anyone know where he went to school? Eltham. He went to Eltham College. I was amazed when I was researching this. I never knew that until I was doing this talk. And he got an award at school called the Blackheath Cup. The Blackheath Cup for his sporting ability. But he's most famous, and this is what Chariots of Fire is all about, he's most famous for going to the 1924 Olympics in Paris, where he refused to run in his best event, the 100 metres, which he was a clear favourite for, because the heats took place on a Sunday. So he entered the 400 metres, and he practiced and he practiced, and he won that event, he got the gold medal, and he also set a world record of 47 seconds. Anyone in here running any faster than 47 seconds? No? It's pretty fast, let me tell you. I think I managed about 55 when I was at university. But there are two quotes of his that have been very important for me in my adult life. The first is this. I think it's coming up here. I believe God made me for a purpose. He also made me fast. So here's one of the greatest runners of his generation saying, God made me for a purpose. Surely that's to run, right? Wayne Rooney's not going to say his purpose isn't to play football, right? No, God also made me fast. Being fast is additional. It's something else God gave me as a gift. My main purpose is something different. And then the second quote that I love is a bit more explicit. It has been a wonderful experience to compete in the Olympic Games and to bring home the gold medal. But since I was a young lad, I've had my eyes on a different prize. You see, each one of us is in a greater race than any I've run in Paris. And that race ends when God gives out the medals. One of the fastest men on earth at the time knew his greatest purpose wasn't being a fast runner, but he was ultimately made for something else. What is your main purpose? What are you ultimately here for? What do you spend those quiet moments dreaming about, thinking about? A lot of us spend our lives searching for some form of validation, some form of purpose, some form of meaning in many different places. Maybe it's our work. I am first and foremost a banker. Maybe we wouldn't say that, but I'm first and foremost a lawyer or a teacher. Dan's a teacher. Tanashi's a lawyer. Richard's a lawyer. Maybe we say, I was made to be a mum. I was made to be a dad. That's the most important thing about me. Maybe what drives us is something else. Ambition. I'm chasing something. I've got to do something, and then life will have some meaning. Well, Jesus says if we follow him, our purpose is to be his light. We are his light, and our purpose is to be light that point a dark world to him. Being his advocate is our ultimate purpose. Salt that is distinctive. Light that scatters darkness. Outreach, Jesus says, is part of our DNA. It's something that should naturally flow out of us. Just like my friend Anna, when people look at you, what should they see and think? They should see glimpses of Jesus and his priorities. So that's my first point. Salt and light are in my DNA. They're in my DNA. But if you're anything like me, then you might be thinking, I'm not sure salt and light are in my DNA. If they are, then they're not very dominant. So my second point, I'm losing my saltiness. I think I'm losing my saltiness. I want to return to my first friend, the new grad in the company. He stood up in front of his colleagues and said, the most important thing in my life is being a Christian. Well, 10 years on, this same friend is at the same company. He's doing brilliantly. He's more senior now. The years have moved on. But he has told me that as he looks back at himself as a new grad, it feels like it was a completely different person. Completely different person. He's still a Christian, but is he as distinctive now? Not particularly. Do his colleagues know he's a Christian? Some, not many. Does he speak about Jesus much? Not really. Does he have the courage to tell his seniors that he's a Christian? Tough one. Not really. Does he occasionally leave his Bible on his desk when he gets in the morning? Doesn't even take his Bible these days. I wonder if we associate far more with him as he is now than 10 years ago. Maybe I'm losing my saltiness. Maybe you're sitting here thinking, do you know what? Maybe I've lost my saltiness altogether. I'm not distinctive. Verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? Hannah and I had our 10-year wedding anniversary last July, so we're coming up to 11 years this year. Something we started to notice is that things are beginning to break in our house. Our microwave just catastrophically, about 2 weeks ago, gave up the ghost. Smoking, sparking, I mean genuinely smoking. The plugs, it burnt into the plug socket. Awful. And it dawned on Hannah and I that it was a wedding present. And actually, 10 years is quite a long time. And things start to break. And other things are wearing pretty thin as well. Our sheets, our duvets, even our mattress, right? Even our mattress is kind of suffering a bit. Guess what? Wedding present. Our toaster went ages ago. Toasters are rubbish. All wedding presents, right? And it's taken us by surprise, actually, just how quickly time goes. But also that things deteriorate over time. If you don't invest in things, they do slowly break and they will fail. And even relationships do. When Hannah and I had our 10-year anniversary, we decided we wanted to do the marriage course at HTB. So we're doing it right now. We're right in the middle of it. We're about halfway. Jess is very kind to look after Bear when we do that. It's my son. So this is the marriage course booklet. We decided we just wanted to have a bit of an MOT. Return to basics a little bit. And the first evening of the course, it hit us like a 10-ton lorry that we got into some really bad habits. Has anyone done it in here, the marriage course? A couple of people, fantastic. We got into some really bad habits and we realized we hadn't been prioritizing time together. We did life, but actually we hadn't invested quality time into our marriage. And slowly over time, that erodes intimacy. It erodes intimacy, it damages relationships. And just like microwaves, even relationships, in fact, especially relationships, if you don't invest in them, deteriorate. And the marriage course got me thinking, it's the same with our relationship with God. If we don't invest in it, the friendship and the devotion will without doubt suffer and lessen. And distance enters in between us and God. And there are probably many reasons why this happens. I think in my life, and this is maybe explains a little bit why I haven't been up here, it's sometimes pain. Things that happen in our lives can hurt us. And that causes distance. And often it's not one single big decision that causes us to distance ourselves from the Lord. We may never have said out loud, God, I want nothing to do with you. That's it, we're finished. But actually it's the result of thousands of tiny decisions, year after year of not spending quality time with him and putting him first. We slowly erode the intimacy between God and us. And we actually get to a point where we say, do you know what? I'm not sure I really believe that. And we start to question it. And we cease. Even if it's just a thought, it questions us. And we cease to be distinctive for him. Like my friend, distinctive? Not particularly. Visible as a Christian? Not particularly. Driven and excited about standing out outside and being his? Not really. So this friend, this grad in his job 10 years ago, I don't know if you've guessed, is actually me. It's my own story I've shared with you. And I remember being full of passion and fire to go into this new job and stand up for Jesus. The job wasn't even the priority. The job wasn't the reason for doing the job. It was just a conduit, a mechanism. My main priority was to be Jesus' voice, to be his advocate, to be his man inside that office. I wanted first and foremost to be a Christian in that office. But as the years progressed, 2006 becomes 2007, becomes 2008, becomes 2017. Yikes. And I haven't consciously strived to put Jesus at the center. And you eventually find yourself in a spot where there's very little salt and light visible in your life. I wonder, think about it, if you ever feel like that. All the time, do you feel like that? Some of the time? I think I'm losing my saltiness. I think I might have lost my saltiness. Maybe what we feel. So going back to the marriage course, how can I be made salty again? How can I be made salty again? My third point. Going back to the marriage course, which Hannah and I are doing at the moment, the sessions have been amazing. There are sessions in here, I'll read a couple of them out. Building strong foundations is the first. The art of communication, resolving conflict, the power of forgiveness, the impact of family, love in action. Some amazing, amazing sessions in there. And they have this concept called marriage time, which is time dedicated to spending together. Just the two of you. And believe it or not, it's once every week. It's pretty crazy. But do you know what? We've been doing it for the last 5 weeks, and it's been amazing. Either have a meal together, do something fun. But the rule is you have to do it together and just the two of you. But it's been amazing to go back to basics. The basics of communicating. Learning to listen. Actually listen. Understanding the other person and what makes them tick. Or what makes them mad, I must say. Saying sorry for certain things. Forgiving. Learning to forgive. And for many on the course, I think it's a process of rediscovering that you actually like the other person in your marriage. So if you're in that space, just as an aside, do the marriage course. It's amazing. But rediscovering the wonder of the other person is possible. It made me think about my relationship with Jesus, actually, quite a lot over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And if you're feeling anything like me, that you may be losing or have lost your saltiness, that you may have permanently installed, going back to the imagery of the passage, permanently installed a bowl over that light, then you need to return to basics. We need to return to basics and rediscover who Jesus is. So reading books with Bear, who's my son. I know his crazy name. Bear loves this book. It's really simple stories about Jesus. But it's challenged me every time I read it. I've got that verse, anyone who doesn't receive the kingdom of God like a child will never enter it. But I've been amazed afresh, and it's prompted me to think about some of the stories in it. Been amazed by afresh by a man who goes on a boat with his friends, and the storm became so frightening that even seasoned sailors were terrified. And this man stood up and said to this storm, he stands up and he says, "Peace, be still." And the sea becomes still. A man that looks at a paralyzed man in front of him, lowered through the roof by his friends, and he says, "Get up, take your mat and walk." And the man did. The man did. A man who was walking to heal a dead girl whose life had gone and was touched by a very sick woman and instantly healed her because she touched his cloak. And he said, "Who touched me? Who touched me?" Power had instantly bound up her broken and poorly tubes inside her. The most powerful me is Thomas. Jesus has been raised. Thomas hasn't seen him. And he says, "I can't believe. I'm sorry, guys. You're idiots. You're dreaming." And here's a man who appears in a room in front of his friends. He's been killed on the cross, however many days or weeks, whenever this happened earlier. And he says to his friend Thomas, "Thomas, put your hand out. Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." The road to Emmaus. Oh man, amazing story. The two guys, didn't our hearts burn within us as that guy talked to us? Isn't it time we all went back to basics with Jesus? When was the last time you read Mark's gospel from start to finish and were just amazed and captivated by the man you meet inside there? You see, if we get our relationship with Jesus right, outreach becomes something we are and not something that we do. I began this evening's talk by saying, I wonder if we all cringe a little bit inside at the thought of outreach. But outreach shouldn't make us cringe or feel guilty. It's not about getting a big stick and hitting yourself over the head. You don't do enough. How can I do more? It's not about that.